Some say hydrogen fuels are a distraction, but it does seem to fill a gap that electricity can't access. Maybe hybrid fueling is the way forward for business, consumers and us. I mean, how many phones do you reckon an individual gets through in their lifetime, or even in like a space of 5 years? I know that...
I've probably done a dozen since the mobile phones came out.
I would say that some people will change their phone pretty much once a year.
Yeah.
What happens to the old phone, you know?
This is the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast. We don't talk about the countryside as much as we used to. You guys, you listeners, are sending in questions, taking us off into all different directions. And mine and William's job is to try and always bring it back to an environmental angle. I'm Stuart the Wild Man Mabber, and one of the co-hosts. I've mentioned William. Say hello, William.
Hello, William.
And we're going to go straight into today's question from the South Oxford area again. Got a number of them coming up, William, this time from West Hendred.
Yes, do you know where West Hendred is?
West of East Hendred.
It's west of East Hendred, absolutely. Yeah. Do you know where East Hendred is?
Yeah, east of West Hendred.
East of West Hendred, yes.
Derek, you sent in a question. Do you want to have a read of it?
Yeah, thanks very much for your question, Derek. Is this Derek's first question, or have we?
I lose
had one
track.
Before?
I don't think we have, but who knows? You have to look back.
Exactly. Yeah. I recognise the name, but we might have had another Derek on. Mm. Anyway, so thank you very much for your question, Derek. Derek's question is: e-waste is growing three times faster than the population. Eyes roll when we're told big is going sustainable, as it's just out to make money. I feel that we need to urgently decouple growth and enviro sustainability for them and us. It's not an either or. Perhaps enviro sustainability can still mean growth, just not as much. Some say hydrogen fuels are a distraction, but it does seem to fill a gap that electricity can't access. Maybe hybrid fueling is the way forward for business, consumers and us.
No, there's a typo in there. It says, eyes roll when we're told big. Yes, that should be big business.
Big business.
I think you've done a typo. I'm just typing this in now. Business. Derek, if you could send another question in, get the typing right. Anyway, yeah, e-waste. It's growing three times faster than the population. Now, what do you think e-waste is?
E-waste is electronic gadgets, mostly. And the anything that goes around that, so the paraphernalia of, say you have a mobile phone, that's e-waste, and then the cables that come around that as well, that's a form of e-waste. So
is e-waste...
it's electronic waste, in a way.
Emails, millions of emails stored that have no use on a server somewhere, is that e-waste?
I wouldn't call that e-waste myself.
Data waste?
Yeah, that's more of a... That's more of a clog on. It's more of a carbon footprint type of idea, because those servers are being powered somehow, and I'd say the e-waste is more the physical for physical thing.
Paraphernalia.
Physical paraphernalia. No, the amount of. I mean, how many phones do you reckon an individual gets through in their lifetime, or even in like a space of 5 years? I know that
I've probably done a dozen since the mobile phones came out.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that some people will change their phone pretty much once a year.
Yeah.
What happens to the old phone, you know? Even if you were actually to send it to a place that recycles them, or a place that refurbishes them, I mean, how much longer life does that phone have? And does it just end up in landfill, for example, but get shipped somewhere else in the world, for example?
I mean, a lot of these things are done on lithium. And they're after those metals. And I was talking to somebody the other day who was saying lithium is, even though it's flammable, and it can catch fire, it's actually a good thing, because once you've dug it out the ground and you put it in a product, it can be extracted from the product and then reused. It doesn't sort of, you know, you extract it from the ground, you use it, and then it can't be used again. But I still think there's maybe other ways we can go, but I don't know what they are. Anyway, it says eyes roll when we're told big business is going sustainable, as it's just out to make money. There has to be a tipping point between public cynicism about a big conglomerate wanting to go sustainable and going green, and truly, genuinely, and a big conglomerate wanting to do that. Yes. You know,
currently not being able to because of the technology or the thinking they have, the culture they have in their business.
It seems to be a lot of energy into destroying these businesses instead of saying, okay, how can we convert? But a lot of conversation I'm hearing at the moment, because we've just had the Women's World Football Soccer World Cup, and there was a big thing about sustainability, or about it. And a lot of conversation was, you know, we're not as sustainable as we really want to be because that's further down the line. You know, the technology, the infrastructure, the pathways aren't there yet to be truly sustainable. There is an element of we left this too long before we start doing this, because if we'd have started this 30 years ago, well, what down the line is now?
Yeah, we've been talking about climate change for decades, and nothing really seems to... If we'd started earlier, as you say, we probably would have been in a better position than we are now,
right? Yeah.
But the question I would ask about, you know, this whole idea of people rolling their eyes when big business are going sustainable, is how can you tell the difference between a business that actually truly wants to be sustainable and one that is just trying to greenwash, for example? You know, several years ago now, some adverts which I think BP were using, or definitely one of the big petroleum companies were using, which is like a picture of an orangutan on their poster. I can't remember what the poster actually said, but I do remember thinking at the time that you're just trying to look sustainable. You're trying to look green. What you're actually doing behind doors. And I think that's the big thing with big companies. You know,
how can you tell them?
I was hoping you could answer that question yourself, because...
Do you think
there's always going to be suspicion? I think there's always suspicion around. I think there always will be suspicion around large
think
companies.
The way you tell is you don't just look in the moment and say, yeah, they're genuine. You have to keep monitoring and keep watching, because that's what will keep the pressure on this. But, you know...
But the question is, how can we sustain that individually ourselves? Yeah. Because we've got far more important things to do than to what big business are doing, because we've got our own lives to lead.
Yeah. Again, if we left it too late.
Who knows?
Who knows? Next part of Derek's question is, I feel we need to urgently decouple growth and environmental sustainability for them and us, them being the businesses, I assume. It's not an either or. We've spoken about this, you know, should we walk away from growth as a model?
There's the donut economy, of course.
It's sort of, you know, I feel that there is urgently, we need to urgently decouple growth and environmental sustainability. I think in another dimension, if we'd have come at this in a different way over the last 100 years, we could have growth and environmental sustainability, but it would be a growth that was fair, and you know, the poor have got richer, but the division between the gap between the poor and the rich have got bigger.
Is there a way of reframing growth in a way? When we talk about growth, we're obviously I definitely analogize that to monetary growth. Economic growth in whatever way that is, but isn't that also growth as in human understanding? Understanding our impact on the planet and making choices. And I don't like to necessarily use the word changes in this instance, but actually making choices, because that's really what it is, about how we actually go about and how we move around and how we do things.
I mean, I'm looking out the window at the moment. There's a big buddleia shrub in the back garden, and I was thinking that growth on that. Well, it actually doesn't grow anymore each year. And what happens is it grows. We cut it back to about 6 feet, and then in the summer it puts on another like 10-15 feet of growth on the top, and then we cut it back.
Yeah.
But that's sustainable. It doesn't get any bigger each year. It's just the same.
You're not killing it either.
No.
It's
It's sustainable.
Yeah, but
it's still growing.
But there always seems to be this. There always is this drive of growth. Whether it's a government trying to be having, you know, lower inflation and higher wealth, mm-hmm. Or even just down to an individual of like, well, actually, no, I want to have a bigger thing. I want to grow in yeah. my life. I want to have more money in my bank account. I want to have a bigger car. I want to have a bigger house. I want to go on better, bigger and better holidays. I want to have a bigger television. You know, it's a growth. That's a way of looking at growth as well, which is a negative form of growth, really. You're growing yourself and you're trying to grow your wealth. You're trying to grow your own. Yeah.
Recently, we've had Susie Darrington, an intern with us,
yes.
who's appeared on this. And what I notice on there, you know, she's at 19, soon be 20. She's got all this energy and stuff and fight in her and fire in her belly. You know, we can change things. And we're older. And I've often said, you know, we need to keep people, and when they get to 30, they drift away from being an active, concerned citizen. And I do wonder, you know, is the human condition stuffing us on this one? I mean, is this our destiny to screw it up for ourselves? And, you know, I'd love to have Susie's energy, but I don't have the energy to have Susie's energy.
So is the human condition basically, are we doomed to being the a dead end?
We might actually be a giant panda. We are, you know, evolutionary dead end.
Really good. It's a really good analogy, actually. I like the analogy of being a giant panda. But, you know, are we at the point now of being able to make the choice to change our future, to go in a different direction, a choice of how we live and a choice of what we do?
We do.
Have we already passed that moment of choice?
Well, I don't think we've passed it, but I just think the people at the top of the pyramid, because, you know, human society is a multi-level marketing business. It's a pyramid scheme, and yes. When you're having your coffee later, have a think about that. Human society and the human species is a giant pyramid scheme.
Yes, you know, and well, people become entrepreneurs and run their own businesses to become the top of the pyramid.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, people at the top are propped up by the people in the middle, and until the people in the middle revolt, and I think Susie said in a previous episode that a revolution is only a revolution when it's been successful.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's only talked about when it's been successful.
Yeah.
I would also say that, you know, that really we talk about the leaders. We talk about the leaders in Britain because we're recording this podcast in Britain. We live in Britain. We live in England in particular. That I've been listening to a podcast recently, which has been going through. I've just at the start of the series, which is talking about. It talks about every episode about every monarch that has ever been since William the Conqueror, since the first William the First, and it did a little bit of back history as well. But when I've been listening to William. About William and his son William, who became king, and then Henry became king after him, and their stories, that actually not much has changed in the way we deal with things. I mean, we're less violent than we used to be internally, especially within internal power structures, but we're still sort of guided in some ways in the UK, especially in England, by those moments, and by maybe even something like that. There's echoes of the Norman Conquest still within British society. A good one, and I'm gonna just go along with a little bit of a tangent anyway, but I think this is relevant. A good one is, and I'm gonna swear as well, was it's just how much the common people, as we want to call ourselves in some ways, and we look up to the aristocracy. I don't count myself in that group. When you get a member of the aristocracy talking in what would be aristocratic language, people don't really engage in it. But as soon as they start using, let's say, Anglo-Saxon terms, they suddenly actually become almost more subservient to them, because they're like, oh my god, this person's talking in our language. You know, there was a quite famous moment of Prince Philip And he had a number of interesting things that he said in his life. He was caught. I think I seem to remember him being caught once on recording because somebody was a photographer faffing around, because we always do that. And all he did was turn around and says, just take the fucking photograph. And it's like, it was just that moment of connection. Like, oh my goodness me, that's an aristocrat speaking our language, because that's our language, sort of thing. So I think that is still there. So what I'm making here is almost like that reverence to power is still there from maybe 1,000 years ago. And how do we, that's one thing I think we need to break in some ways, because then how can we progress if we're still reverent to one, to the person who is above us, the prime minister, for example. People are reverent to the prime minister. I think that people are in power and have our vested interests and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think vested interests have got out of control these days, and the people monitoring vested interests have got vested interests in that monitoring. So anyway, back to the question.
Yes.
Perhaps environmental sustainability can still mean growth, just not as much.
But growth in a different way, obviously.
Yeah, growth. And I think the interpretation of the word growth, I personally think if growth is spread around fairer, where we grow slower, but we all there's a quality of life in the people around you having a better quality of life, because when things get a bit rough, a bit tough. As you know, especially around here, there's more burglaries, there's more muggings, there's more things like that. The people at the bottom of the pyramid aren't having to resort to those sorts of things. They don't necessarily want to; they just have to. So it's just an interpretation of the word growth. So I would say, if you look at it as holistically, we probably grow more if we change the interpretation. The last part is, some even say hydrogen fuels are a distraction, but it does seem to fill the gap that electricity can't access. Maybe hybrid fueling is a way forward for business, consumers and us. Now, we always say, when somebody sends in the question, do we think it's this or do we think it's that? And we often say, well, it's a bit of both. There's a mosaic of hydrogen, electricity. I don't think we even need to rule out fossil fuels, to be honest. It's just when you look at it as a whole, what does that look like? But I there's a lot of resistance. Hydrogen, that's a very interesting one. There's lots of technology around that.
I'm not too aware of hydrogen apart from hydrogen buses. Obviously, hydrogen-powered buses, I don't have any knowledge of.
I don't really either, but it's a lot of people are talking about it, and you think, I need to look into this.
And is it horses for courses sort of thing? So actually, maybe like hydrogen fuel cell, transit might be a way forward. Might do it as a train or as a bus, for example, or a coach. But it might not be a good thing for a certain type of industry. Industry needs a certain type of power. It's also, there's this adaptability, this change that would be needed for business. How do you transist from being, using, say, like, for example, you're using a diesel generator. How do you actually then transist to another generator? Is that possible? Is it compatible with your machinery, for example? Do you have to upgrade your machinery because of what the power system you're using?
And I think a lot of the reason we don't have this mosaic is because it's all about growth. So the people who have got like fossil fuels or whatever, they dominate the energy market and make us reliant.
Yes.
And we're not saying get rid of it. What we're saying is, there's a mosaic of other stuff out there that can be used.
Is it the easy way forward? It's the easy way forward because this is what is it's also an established technology.
Yeah.
Because it's an established technology, that means that all the faults are being ironed out. And if there are any problems, then there's going to be experts how to fix that. Whereas if it's a new technology, like with any new technology, there's a lot more problems that come up and unexpected issues come up, and there might not be the enough experts, and there might be, if there are, there's just a premium of them, so it's more expensive. If you're a small to medium business rather than a large one, which can probably take on the debt of changing what you're doing, I noticed that DPD, for example, is a good example, have actually done a lot of their delivery vehicles now electric. A thing pretty much all the whole entire fleet are. Tesco with their home delivery are big businesses. Smaller businesses necessarily can't change that quickly because they don't have the might not have the actual financial resources to actually do that. So where's the incentive for them to do that? Would that come from government, for example?
So what's the action?
It's a good question, actually. I mean, action, I would say, is just look at what you're doing with your own, as an individual, with your electronic waste. What can you do better with it once it comes to the end of its life? Are you able to extend the life of your electronic goods? And if you are, then that's great. You know, maybe you can pass it on to, say you've got a phone and you think, oh, actually, my friend, he needs a new phone. I'll just give him my old phone because he can't afford a new one, for example. Have it as a backup phone. I'm just thinking about phones because I've got one in my hand. Just the action of it. Just think about what you're going to do with your electronic waste, your e-waste.
And I'm just going to say, spend a bit of time in action. My action is spend a bit of time just thinking about what I said about the human society being a pyramid scheme. Now, if I'm wrong, what is the model of human society, you know, and and where do you fit into that?
Yes,
and that's as simple as that. It's just a bit of churning, a bit of contemplation.
I was going to say sometimes this podcast does seemingly go away from disconnect from the environment, doesn't it? It seems to be disconnected from the environment. Yeah. This one's a bit more of an environmental episode. But what we try and do is we do try and come up with actions. So even with the questions you're sending us in, and please continue sending the questions in, the variety of topics that we discuss, because it keeps us on our toes and it keeps the podcast interesting, I think. But we will try our best to have actions that are environmentally based, won't we?
Exactly. This has been the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast.
I've been William Mankelow, and I didn't get to introduce myself.
Nor did I. I just said I'm Stuart the Wild Man Rabbit.